Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, I am joined by Kari Klein. Now, I encourage everyone to go back in the show notes. I'm going to link to a previous episode where we really had a fantastic conversation about life as a perimenopausal mama and all the ups and downs with hormone balance and mood and all of those things that can come up. So that was way back in episode 9, if you can believe it. Now, life has changed. We've hit the pandemic. We're still living in this time. And I really wanted to have you come back, Kari, to really talk about a really important piece of health. We've talked a little bit about autoimmune issues on the podcast. We'll continue to really delve into this topic. And you're someone who I think is really bringing the conversation around autoimmune issues just to a whole new level. Now, Kari, for those of you who don't know, Kari has been trained as a chiropractor, trained in functional neurology, kind of provide wellness care to families. But what is really your passion is transformational coaching, working with women to really look at, the freedom to choose and create your life, to really connect to who, women fully are and what they're here to do. And I really find that sometimes that can really get clouded by everything else in our life. So thanks so much for coming back, Kari, and again, being willing to have this conversation and really getting into those deep dives with us.
Wow. The pleasure is mine. And thank you, as I said earlier, for this invite. I know it's interesting when people think this is a difficult conversation. That's what I would say I hear from kind of the outer chatter. And yet this is the conversation that is the game changer, not just around autoimmune, but really where I'm speaking to. And because of that, I could swim in this conversation all day long. No loss of energy. It's amazing. And people have, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, it's because once you're in this conversation, everything shifts. So there's a lightness about it. It's not the heaviness that most people are thinking it is. So thank you.
Oh, I love it. So now, especially when we're talking about autoimmune issues, it's so incredibly common for these kind of conditions to show up in women or to flare postpartum or soon after having kids. And it can look in a number of different ways for different women. It can be, we've talked in terms of our thyroid episode, we talked about Hashimoto's thyroiditis, but it can also be rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, Sjogren's. There's so many different conditions and so many ways that autoimmunity can manifest in the body. And even just to quickly cover, like, what is an autoimmune condition? What's going on there? It's where, your immune system really is triggered to create antibodies against ourselves, against our own tissue, where the immune system's job is, you can think of it as like really figuring out what is self and what is not self, what kind of needs to be flagged and processed and removed from our body and what needs to be kind of tolerated and really recognizing what belongs and what doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. you know, in with our conversation last year, we really did talk about kind of hormones, biochemistry, blood sugar balance. That's all like really key and really important. Those kind of that physical, material, you know, aspect of our lives in terms of, you know, our proper gut function, since over half of our immune system's in our gut, having our liver be working properly to again, kind of process the garbage in our body. But another really key piece that we know impacts our immune system is stress. And we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, like, you know, you need to manage stress, you need to deal with stress. And there's this piece of, you know, where does this stress come from and how do we deal with stress? How do you think about stress, especially, you know, when we're looking at kind of what's behind feeling stressed or how stress comes up in the body?
Really, that's a really good question. That's kind of feels like the $1 million question, right?
It so, really is, isn't it?
I'm going to backtrack a little bit on what you said. And
love it.
And I don't really need to preface this, but some of what I say in the beginning, when I start, it can sound esoteric. And I'm just going to put that up front. But I heard it recently, the best way to put this as I start this conversation with you, for anyone who's listening, is I'm actually not talking to you. I'm talking to the essence of you. And there's not been a human I've worked with that doesn't know that they have a voice in their head. And so that one's very tied to our intellect and what we know. So I'm actually speaking to the space in you that has a wisdom that's much deeper than your intellect. So what I like to say, Tony, about autoimmune, that sounds a little esoteric, but really it's not off base when we consider the quantum nature of life itself and the non-locality of who we really are, is that we are misidentified. And it's at the root of everything. So if we are misidentified with who we really are, when you look downstream of that, it actually starts to make quite a bit of sense of why we are struggling so hard with our physical health. So in this conversation, or even as you and I kind of speak and you ask questions and stuff, I will point to the aspect that we have to go further upstream to really see why this even showed up in the first place. So I like to point out to people that they're human beings, and there's the human aspect, which would be us in form. Right? This physical body, my brain, and it's the equipment, right? The equipment with which I'm here to do life in. But there's the being part, and the being is your essence. It's this pervasive aliveness, this intelligence that rides in the background, coordinating all of function, coordinated you from two half cells to the human being, the baby that you were born as, and is still to this day growing, healing, shifting, changing, detoxifying, doing all of that without our intellect, without our controlling it. Like, it's occurring in the background. So this essence of who we are that is neither born or dies, but comes with us and creates this aliveness, that's who we really are. But we at a very young age get conditioned that we are this meat suit, this brain, this ability to, you know, walk and talk and learn and all of that, which is fantastic. I mean, is an amazing, like, we are a miracle. If people don't stop to actually really look back to just see what a miracle we are. So when you talk to the autoimmune piece, if you look further upstream and get a wider perspective, it starts to make sense why, when things look very chaotic in our day-to-day lives, if we are misidentified in that chaos, that our physical bodies are then at struggle because we have forgotten who we are. And so it's like, self, I don't know self. Like, what is self? So I know that might sound a little esoteric. So ask me a question if that felt...
Oh, like I got goosebumps with that whole piece, because absolutely, it's so common to identify me as my legs and my face and my breasts and my arms and my hands and my nails, mm-hmm. my fingernails, my toenails, my lips, and my hormones and what's going on and all of those pieces. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, how do we look beyond that? Because there may be, you know, women out there listening right now, it's like, well, of course I'm my body. Mm-hmm. How am I not my body? Mm-hmm. Because of that disconnection.
Well, here's the thing. Your body ends up being an expression of the essence that you are. But what happens if you get misidentified is in, you know, I am my mind. I am my personality. I am my identity. We get really wrapped in a whole lot of ideas and concepts and that of who we are. And your body, I would say most patients that I've worked with, and certainly now clients, are really identified by their strengths or their weaknesses or, you know, my past and worried about the future. Like, they're very concerned about that. And so it's like you could almost see if you took a little cell in a petri dish and kept giving it this conflicting, like, I'm this, no, I should be that. And oh my gosh, this is going wrong. And oh my gosh, I need to do more. Like, imagine that narrative on this little cell in this petri dish. It would just be like bouncing back and forth going, what? And it's almost like it's set up for, I don't even know how to be. Like, you are so scattered. The only thing that scatters us is this misidentification. So I'd love to speak to this component of, you know, how does our mind come into being? And how can you bring this essence of you, this intuitive, wise, innately designed for reality human, like this miracle of the cosmos? How do we run it that way versus all of the overthinking and the intellectualizing and the judgments and the pressures? And so you were talking about stress, and I'm like, well, once you know who you really are and how we are designed, that's why I come back to design for people, how we are designed by nature. Not what looks normal, but by nature, how we are designed and how experience comes forward, that's the access to stress and pressure for people. And it's a total game changer.
Absolutely. Now, because, I mean, when I think about stress, I think of kind of the demands and pressures and changes that we have to adjust to in order to maintain homeostasis or balance. Again, that kind of natural, ideal function. Mm. And now those demands and pressures and changes can come from the outside. They can come from our circumstances, but they can also come from within us as well, from within this idea of, again, identity, personality, who I am, you know, what is a woman? What is a mother? You know,
the ideas, the concepts, right? That this ideal that we're looking to achieve. But let's even look at that. Like, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. And when you really look, like, honestly, if you're listening to this, like, look, like, where did that idea of how a mom is supposed to be, where did it come from? It's made up somewhere. And you can say, well, society and cultures, and awesome. It's true. Like, that, that's where we get trained early on about how to be in the world, right? That's the training. So when we talk about an untraining in the work that I do, it's like looking at those, it's like, where did those constructs even come from? They had to have been made up somewhere. But what if they weren't there?
Yeah. Then what?
Well, how beautiful. Because then there's nothing.
And yet we're still living in a world where there is society and culture and expectations from other people, expectations from ourselves of what we should be doing. Oh, and
again, did you catch it? Like, that's the construct. Yeah. It's as soon as you start talking in this direction, you start to hear what sounds off in the conversation. It's like these expectations of, oh wait, who's making them? right? We start to kind of see, now you're right, out there it does look like, right, that there is an expectation of how to be. And sometimes people get a little bit nervous at looking at them because they're scared of like, well, then what happens? Like, what happens to me if, you know, if I really do, you know, create my own path? And I'm like, but who you are designed by nature is intuitive and won't be careless. You won't be reckless with your child. You wouldn't be reckless with your own health. But somehow this construct of how I should be is the thing that keeps us imprisoned until we look the other way and go, wait, like if there was no pressure that looks like pressure, who would I be? And you see people just like, they light up because they get it. They go, oh, wait, like I could just be free and like choose. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually who we are. But then we get caught up.
We get caught up in a certain role that we're playing.
Totally.
Multiple roles for sure. Because yeah. There's the role as mom. Mm-hmm. There's the role with our partners if we have a partner. There's the role with our other family members, you know, with our parents, our siblings, our coworkers. And I think, I know sometimes I catch myself feeling stuck in that, mm-hmm. where we just kind of go on autopilot. And I'm not necessarily coming from who I'm being, but I'm just doing.
Yeah.
Because there's, again, just so many things that just need to be done. So you just do them. Mm-hmm. But that's where I find for myself, there can be a lot of resentment come up in that.
Sure. Can I speak to the autopilot you just talked
yeah,
about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So when I've heard this before, it's like, oh, this is just who I am. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I go on autopilot. And when we look, and we look in the direction of, you know, truthfully who you are, at the deepest level of you, there is an essence of you that's always been there. Now, most of my clients, there hasn't been a person who didn't think they had a soul, but there, you know, there can be people who don't feel like you have a soul, but no one can counteract even the science that we're energy. And so where's that energy coming from? Where does it go to, you know, but if you were to look from that place, and you can, and one of the easy places, especially for women to look, if you've had children, is to look at your little newborn baby. I mean, you can feel it and see the miracle that they are. And they're just a blank slate of consciousness. They're just this little being that is completely precious. And of course they have a dependency. We have to be birthed when we are, because our head would be too large if we had a longer gestational period. So we're not ready to care for ourselves. We're not like horses that stand up and run away, you know, like we're not that. So, you know, there's a part of our evolution with the higher order brain that we have. It takes us a number of years for us to kind of get our legs and get our knowing and get our bearings. But that blank slate, that essence that we are, never goes away. But what happens is there's a whole lot of training that happens on top of that. And it looks like we're supposed to be a certain way. But if you were to look back, it's like, well, that's just someone's idea of how it was supposed to go. So when you talk about, well, I go on autopilot, yes, you have habitual ways of doing. Habitual ways that you have chosen to navigate the world, but you were trained in that. You trained, you've been training for decades on this. That's not your autopilot. That's your training.
Yes. I'm kind of laughing because it's like, right. I think of it as a default mode.
Right.
But that default mode was created. It was set.
You got it.
And so it wasn't like I was just born with it.
No, because your default, if we were really to talk default, is look back at your babies. Now, except for when they, you know, maybe have a wet diaper, they're hungry, or they're overtired. Okay. So that's, you know, them giving you a signal. But for the most part, they are present. They are in wonderment, in awe of what they are experiencing. I mean, do you remember when your baby saw they had the hand was like, that's my hand, right? Like, it was so exciting. Like, we're just like, oh my gosh, like every day feels like Christmas to them or whatever holiday you love to celebrate. Like, it feels that way. For babies, they are just pure awareness and then just discovery. That's who you are at the nature of you. But we've forgotten because we've piled all this habitual doing and kind of, we call it being, my default being way. But that, like you just said, no, that's my training of how I was. So I use the example when someone says, I'm shy. I'm like, well, when you were a baby, you weren't shy. You didn't know anything about yourself. You were just in the world. You know, the chair looked exciting, right? You wanted to crawl your way over to see the chair. Like, until someone said, that's a chair, you didn't know what it was. It was just exciting. But then we start to language things, right? And then we get tapped into it. It's like, oh, well, my child's shy. No, they've learned to be shy. Shy is a way of learned behavior. Mm-hmm. So who you are, so this is, again, we're coming upstream and we're looking from this fresh place of like, what if there was no training? Who are you?
And there's a piece of, it can be really, do you find that it's really challenging to have women that you work with and men that you work with to let go of that training? Like, how do we recognize that training and how do we let go of it and be clear of it so that we can connect to who we really are?
I think what starts to happen, because I don't have a lot of tips and strategies for people, that's in the world of, you know, this meat suit, right? It's like, how do I do this better? And I'm like, well, if you know how the whole system, how the human design goes, we're not going to have to do a lot of hows because it's all of a sudden going to make sense to you what to do. But when you say like the let go, I point people to show them what they picked up. Because if you picked it up, that's how you let it go. But if you think you have to let go of something that was actually who you are, how are you going to do that? You're going to feel like, well, who will I be then? So I come from the place of really getting people to look in this direction of like, what if I was just this peaceful, joyful, full of capacity for experience human? But I noticed that I picked up this thing that I get really stressed out. But that's actually not my nature. That's just become habitual for me or become my normal. It's way easier to see it from that minute, and then you'll catch yourself when you pick it up. Therefore, letting it go doesn't feel like a job because you just noticed you picked it up. You're like, oh, there I go.
And it's funny because I was laughing at what you were saying in terms of the how, because immediately I always want to go, okay, how do I do it? What's the information I need? What are the steps? Just give me the rules, give me the guidebook so that I can follow it and I can do it. And it can be all clean and neat. And I'm just like, again, gaining more knowledge and information to be better. Right, but that's not it, right?
No, because what are you trying to be better than? How could you be better than the beautiful little Frankie that you were holding in your arms when she was born? There's no such thing.
So there is this piece of coming back to ourselves.
Yes. It's a remembering.
And a remembering. Yeah. But then what do we do with all of those experiences, good or bad?
Right.
Traumas, big T traumas or little T traumas.
Exactly.
That we went through in our life.
Yeah. And this is big, right? Because this is kind of the big conversation that's out in the world right now, is that we haven't been allowing people for their experience. We haven't been listening for what they're experiencing, right? And therefore avoiding, negating, dismissing. Like, I know so many humans are feeling unheard, dismissed, not listened to, and scared because they're not being listened to. So if we were to come back to the place of who we've always been, but we forgot in our training because we get a little turned around, is that your mind is the thing that's created a separate you in the first place. So the mind is like the most amazing interface we have between formless and form, infinite and finite. So we are still connected to the infinite. We kind of forget because we think we're this separate being. But when you come from that place and you start to see who you really are, and then you get like, oh, so there's an intelligence in the world. The world is innately intelligent. Look at a flower. It doesn't have to ask how to bloom. It doesn't ask how to hibernate. It doesn't ask how to, you know, grow in the spring. Like, nature is on its own cycle with an intelligence built in. We are also of that. We've just forgotten because we wear clothes and we drive cars and we live in houses. But our nature is still tied to all of that. So then we are conscious. Now, every living thing has a consciousness. I mean, they are even saying trees, right? Trees are conscious. Like, every living system is conscious. They even say, like, the inanimate, like rock and the earth, like the cosmos are conscious. It's been conscious. The science is proving it's conscious. It can actually make choice. And we're an extension of that, right? So we have this ability to make choice. And then there's mind, right? And then there's this like divine intelligence of this mind that we're still connected to, but we forget. We think we have our own mind, right? Like, I'm my own thinking. But the thing that can get missed in that is that we have this capacity to think. And thought is a creative energy. But what happens is we start to get attentive to the thinking we have. So you can only think once you learn language. So we're born conscious. Language comes later. So language, you know, if it starts around 1.5 and then really 2, they start to pick up words. And then at 3, they're probably speaking. They're already now starting to compartmentalize the world into thoughts, right? Into little forms of how things are. Oh, that's a table. That's a chair. When I'm thirsty, I get water. Like, we start to kind of piece the world that way. But what gets missed in that is it happens through our thought. That world is coming forward. And that missing energy of thought is the piece that I have people start to notice, that what you started picking up was a lot of thinking. And in our busyness later in life, if we were to talk to moms, they have a lot of thinking. And it can be overwhelming. And when I start to point them to that who they are is a quieter space where all the thinking is coming and going, they start to see that all the thinking doesn't have to have their attention. And this is where it starts to shift for them around expectations, stress, and pressure. They start to realize, oh, it's all of my thinking that's creating the pressure that looks like it's outside of me. But it's not outside of you. Because if you look at nature, there's no pressure on nature.
Yeah, there's the expectations of what we think nature should be. And we'll kind of take control of nature. Yeah. But yes. Do we have to?
No.
No.
I sent a client one time. He was really struggling with high anxiety. And sometimes I do these long sessions with people, and it's really wonderful because you can kind of dive and swim in it and they see new things and, you know, but sometimes they get caught right back up in the thinking, and it was just a good time to have a break. And I said, okay, well, go get yourself a snack. You get hydrated, but I really love you to step outside. And I know you're in a city and it can feel a bit busy, but what I want you to do is just, if you have some trees and some grass or even just a little green space near you, just go out and just have a little walk. But I want you to walk a little slower. Just breathe the air and just see what you see. Notice what you notice. And, you know, we'll reconvene in 40 minutes. So we get back together because I'm never sure what people are going to see. This is always why I love this work, because it's literally like you're in the wonderment of childhood. It's awesome. So he comes back in and I said, so how was your break? He goes, it was great. And I said, so you notice anything? Did you see anything? And he goes, you know what I saw? Do you know what? the grass is not in a hurry to grow. And I just started laughing. And so did he. He was like, the grass is not in a hurry, but I'm in a hurry all the time. And he said, I just noticed, like, where is the hurry coming from? And he noticed it. It's his thinking. And I thought, wow, I didn't tell him that. He saw that. And I think that's why coaching is so beautiful, because I'm not telling anyone anything that they don't already know, but they haven't been looking. And then suddenly they see it. And when he saw that, it just made all the sense in the world that the reason I'm feeling so anxious is because I'm attending to all my hurried thinking. And that's just thinking. It's not even what's happening in the world. Like, I'm just totally caught up. I'm playing a movie in my head that I can't get out of, until I saw that it was me. Right? He saw it. Mm-hmm. So that's why this is learning by insight. So you ask kind of like, how do we take this stuff into a real life? And that's been my learning, right? Over the last few years, it's okay. So if we're innately and by nature made to be peaceful, and there's this like gentle moving in this stillness, and we're inspired, we get this beautiful creative thought that comes through, and we actually learn by insight. I realize, like, now we learn by insight. We don't learn by information grab. We learn by insight. You can bring that to your everyday. So what I'm noticing now in my day-to-day, say with my little guy, my mother's intuition is kicking harder because I'm actually paying attention to that and not the doing what needs to be done. Yes, we have to get out the door at a particular time, but there's actually times I've relaxed on it. Like, I'm like, he's six. He doesn't need to be in a hurry. Why are we in a hurry? So I call the school and go, you know what? He's going to be 15 minutes. He just needed a few to play with his Lego this morning. And it's totally slowed me down. It slowed our family down. And now we have a kid who's just rolling with it. So I'm like, okay, this makes a difference. So I think there is a little piece of untraining that we do to bring this into real life. So I'm sure I just went off on a tangent there, and I don't know if it was easy to follow, but if you heard anything in that, please.
Oh yeah. Because I mean, there's that piece of being willing to get out of that autopilot and just pay attention to what's there.
Yes. Underneath the noise.
Underneath the noise. Mm-hmm. Underneath all of the thinking, all of the thoughts, all of what's running around in our brains, our to-do lists, and appointments, and where we need to go. And then, you know, just what you shared with allowing that space and not rushing and not hurrying. I mean, again, it's those like, those agreements that we have in our culture and society, like our kids should be at school on time. Mm-hmm. Why?
Why
do they need to be there at a certain time, especially when they're 6 years old or 7 years old? Is that going to change anything? Mm-hmm. And I really recognize that, because again, Frankie's starting to ask the question, why?
The best question in the world, everyone. It's awesome.
So then there's that piece of choosing how to answer that question, why? Mm-hmm. Because that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why?
Yeah.
And really, really choosing what's important and what really matters. Does it really matter to be at school on time?
Right. Now, you know, we're still in a linear world here, right? We still work with, there's still going to be presentations I have to have on time. I need to be here in this podcast on time. But what I have found is that once you see that it's always me that's ever creating pressure, that by my thinking, that I start to notice that I can move at the speed of life and be more effective and show up on time without feeling pressured. So that's it. It's not because people are like, well, what am I going to do? Like, just go sit on the couch and eat Doritos? And I'm like,
oh, please, can we?
Right. So some moms would be like, yeah, can I? And you would do that for a bit. But if that space remained for you, you'd be inspired. Like, mm-hmm. I catch myself doing things that I never would normally do, like go organize my kids' closet, which is the thing that I could usually avoid because it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much stuff in here. But it's like when you give yourself the space, you actually get up to doing the things that call you to be done, not what everyone else thinks you should be doing, or you've got this caught up story about what you should be doing. Because there's actually, there's no should, there's just right now. There's only ever right now.
I love that. So really connecting to what is inspiring you mm-hmm. and motivating you instead of doing from a place of obligation, expectation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The and should fear. And fear. Oh God.
And fear. Fear is the motivator.
Oh, I forgot most about fear.
It's a big one and we miss it. Like once I caught that I was actually scaring myself, a majority of my day for a while, I was like, no wonder my physiology is struggling. Mm-hmm. Because what I am doing is fearing myself, scaring, reacting to it all day long. And by the end of the day going, well, I don't know if I got it all done, but man, I'm exhausted. Why? Because I was attempting to quell the fear I was building up for myself. And yet I wasn't like present with, you know, drinking my cup of coffee or present with my little guy as he's eating breakfast and kind of telling me his tummy isn't feeling good. You know, like we can get so busy. I would say that's probably one of the hardest things to invite people into this conversation. They're like, I just don't have the time. And I said, well, what you will find in this is that your relationship to time will shift because it will become less psychological, less demanding, less scary. And you're actually going to be with the moments of your day and you're going to get a lot done from a much happier, joyful place. It's actually the coolest experience I've ever had. Cause trust me, I've been fearing myself through much of my life. Until I saw it.
And, you know, and of course my immediate thought as a naturopathic doctor goes into, yeah, I mean, when you're coming from a place of fear and busyness and hurrying, what you're doing is you're stimulating and having your body run at the setting of the sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight or freeze mode, which doesn't have our body, our physiology work optimally. It has us use up a lot of energy to be in that state. And then you can get into burnout. You can get into exhaustion. And that's not our healing mode. That mode doesn't allow for that innate corrective mechanisms that we have. But when you're coming from a place of joy, gratitude, inspiration, quietness, peace, connectedness, that state is what really triggers our parasympathetic nervous system, our healing mode, our rest and digest mode.
And truly our nature's state, right? So if, again, we talk back to nature, you can see it all parallels. Like there's a great book, Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. Mm-hmm. I mean, zebras are not wandering around, right? Wondering when the alligator is going to get them or when the lion is coming out. They react when they need to react. But most, I'm going to speak to women because we get really caught up. And it's happening to men too. But for women, the exhaustion is such a big piece. But what we do is we push through it while we're still demanding and pushing on that sympathetic system because we've got the, what if the bear, what if this happens? Like, what if I lose my job? Like, you can just see all the stuff that sits in front of us and we're not actually grazing. We're not actually just present. We're so in the fear of it. And I know people would say, well, fear is a strong word, but when we do this work, when you look, you go, my gosh, I really am scaring the poop out of myself most of the day. No wonder my system is revved and no wonder I'm depleted and no wonder I'm exhausted. And that's what happened to me. I mean, I had professional burnout, but here's the interesting thing that happened is once I saw that it was mind made, it was my mind that was informing my nervous system of the fear all day long and the concerns and the shoulds and the expectations. It actually didn't take time to recover from burnout because I saw where the stress was actually coming from. And once I got to release it, my system was just like, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness we can just come back online. Now, of course, physiology takes a little while to turn. But what I had to do is I had less the how. The how started to fizzle a little because I just could see that if I addressed what was informing my nervous system all the time and it was more settled, my nervous system just came back online. And now it's been a slow recovery in the sense of just making sure I'm getting the nutrients. Now I'm, you know, making sure I'm, you know, getting my daily fresh air and getting my movement. But that how becomes really common sense when you're not trying to force it into a schedule of stress. I don't know if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, and I mean, everything that we've kind of talked about kind of sounds a bit like, again, like you said, esoteric or really kind of like magical.
Yes.
And it's like, how do you connect? Again, I go back to like that how. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, this is what you do with your transformational coaching. You guide people to be able to connect with that themselves.
Totally. And this process, because, you know, people have probably been in therapy and they've probably been doing self-improvement and self-development for a long time, which can feel very hard work-ish. Mm-hmm. Once I hit burnout, there was no gas in the tank. And so it couldn't be effortful for me anymore. And I thought, my goodness, we're designed to be restorative. What is going on? And so it was this access, you know, to the mind. But what I really started to see is that the only place I was ever broken, and my mind kept me teary, mm-hmm. was in my mind. Mm-hmm. And once I saw I wasn't broken, I was mad at first. And then I was like, oh, thank God. Oh, thank goodness I'm not broken. Like, I saw that no one else was. And it changed everything. Because I know I could see the struggle. I saw what I was up against, and what everyone is up against is thinking that they're broken. And I want to point to people that you're not broken. No one's broken and nothing's missing. But we get really turned around. And I feel like my job is like walking. I always picture myself. I feel like I'm walking into a crowd and I grab someone's hand and we just go for a walk. And we look and they see it. It's the coolest process because they're like, oh my gosh, if I don't have to fix me, I'm like, wow, you have so much more available to you. I mean, imagine even with my, cause I have an autoimmune physiology going on. I don't say I have anymore. There's an autoimmune physiology going on with me. And the best they can say with an autoimmune is that you can get a prolonged remission. And I'm like, it doesn't feel very inspiring. However, because it's not up to me in my healing, but if I can be connected to who I really am and how I really was designed, my physiology has the opportunity to shift at any moment, but I'm not in charge of that. And the efforting went away. I just had to see that I was okay. Okay. We're okay.
Oh God. Thank you. Like, thank goodness for you, Kari, to be able to point to this and to be able to hold people's hands and take that walk with them, because that's not normal. It's not normal or common in our lives with all of that busyness. Yeah. And that's, and so, I mean, that's where I'm just so grateful for you and this conversation and for what you're bringing into the world and for, again, the guidance and support that you can give to people to be able to look at this. Because again, it's just not what's normally done in our lives. So yeah. Now, there are probably people listening where it's like, okay, where can I get more of this? This feels good, because I know this feels good to me. So yeah. It must be feeling good to other people who are listening. So how can people connect with you? How can people work with you to walk along this path?
Well, it, you know, and I'll be honest, stepping onto this path has been interesting, right? Because I'm trained in fixing. Yeah. So tell me I didn't have a big conundrum show up when, you know, people come to me for fixing, even though I was dealing in a holistic health. I know where healing comes from, but I missed the whole piece that no one's actually broken, right? And then all of a sudden I saw it. I was like, whoops. So that's why I stepped back from practice, because the conversation wasn't aligned to who we really were. So I had to come back at it with fresh eyes. This feeling is really common because it's who we really are. This is the beauty of this conversation, is it doesn't take much to notice who we really are. And any group stuff I've done, that is the comment I get. They're like, man, I have never shared this much, felt this good, and been this connected this quickly. Like, how did that happen? You're doing it over Zoom. And I said, right, because who you are is connected. You were never separate. And so in building community, you and I have talked about this. I think I got a little scared at first and was like, oh gosh, like what if I can't do this right for people? I could hear it. It's like, oh no, I got to do this thing. All of a sudden I'm like, no, 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 Kari, you just have to keep remembering who you are. And so it's really only been a little more recently. I've been running group programs for a long time. Those have been just beautiful. But probably creating the continual community is actually just coming online for me, because I finally had clients reach back out like, where is this conversation? I need this. I've gotten lost again. And I'm like, oh, I'm right here. So I just in Facebook right now, I'm just going to be kind of, I know it's Facebook. I'd love to find another platform for people sometimes, but that'll be, you know, in my journey figuring it out. But they can follow me, This Life Kari Klein, on Facebook. And I do have a community called The Living Room, The Living Room, where you can sit and chat, but also The Living. We're going to come alive, people. So The Living Room is a community, and I'll start to put more invites through my feed so people could see it and come in. And it's just going to be this conversation, like just gently pointing people back. And there's a few individual programs I'll be doing. One is around autoimmune specifically, because this community feels like they've been set adrift to try and figure out all this stuff on their own. And it feels very overwhelming. And then again, like you say, the demands of life feel very big. And so we do look in this direction together with familiar experience to know, to see our okayness in it. And that's been really a wonderful journey. Others will be on health realization for people who struggle with, you know, depression and anxiety, because those are debilitating, because they catch their own steam, right? And they keep going. And wouldn't it be lovely to have some peace and calm and contentment? So a lot of that will happen in Facebook. I'm just getting back into Instagram, but they're welcome to reach out to me via email. And then I'm not someone who requires people to join a program. And maybe I'm not the first resource. I can give them a book, but I love connecting with people. If I connect with you, I can find out what it is will best support you now. But I love meeting humans. So yeah, Kari at KariKlein.ca, Canadian, is the best way probably to reach me via email. And I'm happy to answer any email and connect and contribute.
Oh, that's perfect. Mm. Oh, thank you so much. I love that. And I love, again, what you offer and that ability to just connect, even if it's not, you know, joining any program or anything you have, but connecting to make sure that people have the resources that they need.
Yeah. And if people hear a little, again, when I said in the beginning, I'm not speaking to you, I'm not speaking to your intellect to have you try and figure it out or understand it. If you're confused, or if you heard something that just resonated, that's the intuition kicking. That's it. That's what I'm speaking to. So that's why this feeling comes up for people. And again, yeah, it's not about me. It's not about, you know, what it is I'm doing for work necessarily, but if I can be of support in guiding people in a direction that medicine is not, I think that's helpful, because we can be full on with medicine, which is helpful, like, oh my goodness, and life-saving, but it's not going to address the link of you remembering who you really are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. Let's switch gears.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
Now, if you have a super mom moment and a mama mess up, absolutely, like, that'd be great to share it. I'm going to jump in and share my super mom moment and mama mess up for the week. Now, although it did happen a couple of weeks ago, super mom moment, I saw on a local moms group that, no, it wasn't even a local moms group. It was a colleague of mine who let me know that there was a local hotel that had a pool and a water slide that were booking times. So I jumped on, booked a time. So I was like, scheduled pool time. Like, we haven't swam for over a year. Frankie has not gone swimming for over a year. So we booked a pool time at a hotel pool, 30 minutes. I thought, oh, 30 minutes isn't a lot of time. For, you know, a 2.5-year-old, it's a fair amount of time in the pool and the water slide. So I was just like, felt like total super mom, like, to be able to provide this experience and opportunity for us as a family in this, like, crazy different time being in the pandemic. Mm. So I was just so proud of myself. And then that kind of led to a mama mess up, because not only were we so excited about getting in there, I did not read the rules that were posted for the water slide. And I did not check how fast the water slide was before we went down. So Frankie went down with our daddy. They just, like, that was the first thing they did when we got into the pool. Thankfully, she went down with her daddy, so she wasn't by herself or anything. But yeah, it was kind of fast. So I was like, whoopsies, that's a little dangerous. And I mean, everything worked out okay. She was wearing a life vest and so no problem. But it was just like, maybe next time I'll just check out, you know, the situation, get all the details before we jump in, or not.
Ooh, yeah.
One of those things.
Oh my gosh.
How about you, Lori? Now, no pressure, but...
No pressure. Well, I would say the funny thing, when you watch your kids get older, right, they know, right? They're learning how things go. But there have been times, right, where I'm getting in the car and, you know, you shut the door and you start to drive. And then I hear Jake go, "Mommy, you didn't do up my seatbelt." I'm like, oh, right. Like, thank goodness he's now 6, right? And can remind me. Although now he's even clicking it in for himself. So that's, maybe he learned something there that was helpful. But the fact, and then he tells his father how to drive with 2 hands on the wheel. Remember, Dad, 2 hands. So I think that is, like, super cute, but those can be my mess ups, right? Where you just, you know, again, you can get ahead of yourself and not be in the moment. You just totally miss something like that, which, you know, could be dangerous, but now my child can tell me.
That's hilarious, because Frankie's starting to say two hands, mommy.
Like, how do they even know? I never told Jake you're supposed to drive with 2 hands.
No. I have no clue either.
They're so perceptive.
And I've always wondered, you know, when I'm clicking Frankie into her car seat, I'm like, would I ever forget to do this? maybe, but that's, you know, maybe in the future. Oh, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. So now, Kari, we were kind of even talking before we started recording a little bit about, like, sleep. And, you know, a previous mama must have that you shared was the grow clock, because the grow clock really worked for your little guy.
Yeah.
Now, and that is actually related to the mama must have for me right now. It is a white noise machine and a fan, because we were having some struggles with Frankie with sleeping and again, hearing different noises in the house and that kind of thing. So for me right now, it's having her white noise machine. It's set on kind of a rainfall setting, so it kind of sounds like rain falling. But then also just having a fan on to just, like, really, and that has allowed her to really get a good night's sleep. It doesn't always prevent her from kind of waking up in the middle of the night, but at least for the past couple of nights, it has given her a full night's sleep. She hasn't woken me up in the middle of the night. So it's like, oh, definitely a mama must have for me right now. How about you, Kari? What would be your mama must have? What do mamas out there need in their lives?
Goodness. There just feels like so many good things. We, one of our struggles has, with our little guy, he's a picky eater, and gosh, sending lunches. And he was doing his own lunch when he was like, you know, 3.5, 4. And I used to have to tell the teacher, like, can you make sure he eats? Right. Cause he's too busy to sit and eat. And we get the hangry child. And I'm like, you pick him up and he's miserable. One of these, things that I love is this, lunch kit that has all these devices, but it's a big lunch kit. So they don't have to try and do all these individual. Why can I not remember the name? Oh my goodness. I can't remember the name, but if you can get a lunch kit that everything is in one, because there's a part where I'm sure he eats his afternoon snack as lunch and then decides lunch at another, like, it was like, if I don't put it in this one container for him, he's going to miss pieces. So anyway, that's been a mama must have, because, you know, that's almost the first thing we check when he gets home. Like, how is he eating today? Cause like that gives us the cues of like, okay, do we need a snack before dinner? I mean, all this snacking is hard, but man, my little guy goes into hypoglycemia pretty easy. He's so lean. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would say it's that kit. Why? It starts with an F. I'm sorry, Tony.
No worries, because Noah will do. We'll post a link for it in the show notes so that people can go and see and find, you know, the lunch kit that you're talking about. And in the show notes is also where you'll find, again, links to connect with Kari, links to previous episodes where we've talked. So again, everything is there. So again, those show notes will be, you know, where you're listening to this podcast, or again, visit our website at perimenopausalmamas.com for those show notes. So thanks so much, Kari, for joining us today. Thanks everyone out there for joining us today. Again, if you enjoy this episode, please, we'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a review, a 5-star rating, even share this episode with your perimenopausal mama friends too. So everyone, stay safe and healthy out there. We'll see you again. Bye-bye.